Hello there. Welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you are having a wonderful day this first day of the week, this August 17th of 2020. Hope you had a good weekend and that all is well with you and yours. Our weekend was pretty cool. I mean, what we had of it. My wife, Jane, had to work Saturday. That put her out of the picture, really, for all day, because when she works on a Saturday, it's like an 11 or 12-hour day. It's a long, long day. Long shift. But other than that, it was a good weekend. We had a good time visiting with... I had a good time visiting with family, which is why I wasn't here Friday. And I didn't tell you anything about it because, you know, it's family. So I got this this text, well, from my mother earlier in the week saying, hey, could we go visit sometime in the near future? Could we go visit your uncle? And he lives in Huntsville, Alabama, where the Redstone Arsenal is, the Marshall Space Flight Center, NASA. He used to be a NASA consultant. And he's in his mid-80s, upper 80s, he's getting on in years, so... My mom, in her mid-80s, wanted to go have a visit, and so we did. And we ended up spending a big chunk of the day there, longer than anticipated, just because of how things worked out. You know, people coming by and the like. You know, it's just someone who wasn't there. My aunt couldn't be there for the first part of the time while we were there. And about the time we were ready to get up and move, she called and said, hey, I'm on my way. And so we hung around and visited with her for a little while. And she runs a restaurant, so she had a lunch thing to, and she had to cover the lunch crowd. But I didn't find out we were going until Thursday afternoon. So we talked and agreed on leaving at 9 o'clock Friday morning, which made it impossible for me to have any studio time in the morning. I thought I might be able to pull things off in the afternoon, but I didn't get back here until close to 7. So it was a long day. We were on the road. I spent about 4 hours driving and back and forth, but it was good family time, good visiting, and that's how the weekend started. After that, not much, really, no excitement. Thrift store scavenging and breakfast. Can I just say, if your place of business, because of coronavirus, is really not open to indoor dining, would you please put up a sign? A lot of places do. They have signs on the outside that says we're open for pickup, right? You know what I'm talking about. Pickup only. Dining room closed, pickup only. We stopped. We went to one place. Hey, it was like three strikes, you're out. We went to one place and they had changed their hours. So we were there an hour before they opened. And I thought, well, that's fine. Let's go somewhere else. And I swung into some place. I was in the lead, and I swung into some place because, hey, this is right here. Why don't we give this a shot? No signs saying that they were only open for pickup or anything like that. We walked in, and I walked up to the register, and there's the big plexiglass shield around the register, and the people are buzzing around taking care of the drive-up. The drive-through window, and I turned and looked at the dining area, and almost every table was blocked off or had a sign on it that said this table is not for use. So basically, their dining area was closed. So we turned around and walked out of that place and went to option C, the third option, and had breakfast. And it was like one strike, two strike. Wow, we finally got a bit of it on the third strike. But not completely satisfied, not completely. And after that, not much. I mean, I didn't discover anything fantastic at the thrift store scavenging. And other than, let's see, what? Oh, yeah. I've got a can of spray paint sitting here from where I brought it next to my desk because I was working on details on something and needed a little bit of that color paint to touch something up. So I had to spray it in a little plastic cup and use a tiny little, like a Q-tip, to apply little dots of it someplace to fix the finish on a paint job. And I, Once I got done with it, I'm just like focused on, oh, that's done, that's good. And I walked off with what I was working on, left the paint right here. But I painted the wheels for the little red car, and got the center cap logos painted, and that's all done. And so really, there's not much left to do on the little Miata at all. So although it's making some odd noises, and I may find myself hiking it back up in the air again and dropping the transmission again because it's making some weird noises, and I don't want to do that, but I may have to anyway. But that was pretty much for the weekend. That's yesterday was a quiet day as usual. As of late, we have been going to church in our pajamas via the internet, and afterwards we did all of the housework we couldn't get accomplished on Saturday, and then late in the day we went to visit Mom for a few minutes because she needed some help with something, and I took some tools, some gear over there, and helped out with something. And one of the things she wanted me to do was to give her roof an inspection, and I said, sure, I'll be glad to. I'll bring the drone over, and we'll take a look at it. And she lives just close enough to the airport that there's no way to fly around her house. So I wasn't able to do that. And it was really bizarre, too, because she told me that there's a guy that works on her roof who has a drone, and he uses it for roof inspections, and he's able to fly there, or was the last time he was there, but I wasn't able to fly this time. And I know that there have been some changes in recent months, maybe in the last year, and because I sat down at her house one time and pulled up the AirMap program and looked at the situation there and realized that we were in the potentially in the edge of an exclusion zone, but someplace I had flown that I thought was even closer to the airport wasn't. But then when I tried to fly at her house over the weekend, I checked that same mapping service, and now that other place is in the exclusion zone, and you can't fly there at all. Weird stuff. I just don't understand what's going on. But things change, and so I thought, wow, I have an opportunity to get the drone in the air, and that's pretty cool. Didn't happen. And then I tried getting authorization yesterday morning, and and I bored down into it and tried two or three different directions, and one of the places that I went trying to get permission, trying to get authorization, actually shut me down before I could get anywhere. When they saw the location, they said, no, there's no sense in even asking for permission. You can't do that there. So, no flying at Mom's house. Meh. Well, so much for small stuff. First world problems. And that was pretty much my life over the weekend. But we did have some good family time over the weekend, and that's good. And I hope you had some family time as well, that you were able to unplug and to get away from the news, which was a topic of the conversation yesterday afternoon, was that if you turn off the TV and you turn off your social media and you just hang with your friends and your neighbors, and you realize people, the world is not really as bad off as the news wants you to believe it is. And they want you to believe it's bad off because, as I've said so many times, they thrive on sensationalism. It drives everything. So the worse things are, the better off it is for the news department. And if the news channels can focus on anything that is sensational or horrific, they will. And so they give us the impression that things are really bad. And that works on a political level because uninformed people will believe whatever they're told. Let me say that again. Uninformed people will believe whatever they're told because they don't know the truth. And coming from a news organization, they will trust a news organization because the rationale is, well, they wouldn't lie, would they? Well, dear Sheltered Shirley, yes, they would lie for ratings. Ratings mean revenue. Revenue means money. Yes, they would lie. And they do lie every day. And so people are uninformed. They don't really know what's going on. And so you can tell them pretty much whatever they want to believe, and they'll believe it because they don't know what's really happening. And those of us who do pay attention, who bother to educate ourselves, who have that kind of a curiosity, and we want to know what's going on in the real world instead of what's happening in the entertainment world, in the sports world, and sports, entertainment sports is all right. Everything has its place. But that can't take the place of reality. So when you bury yourself in reality, in unreality, then you reject reality when you hear it because it doesn't click for you. It's just the way life is. And I saw another example of it over the weekend where I saw this exchange where people in the comment section below a post on social media were arguing about which Harry Potter book we're living in right now. Yeah. Is it the one where the Ministry of Magic starts taking over? Is it the one where Voldemort is evil? Is it one where Harry's just learning what's going on? Is it this? They're having this exchange about which Harry Potter book we're living in right now. We're not living in Harry Potter books. We're living in the real world. And in the real world, there are political forces at play, and some of them want the entire world deceived so they can continue reshaping it into the mold they want, and others want to preserve what we have in this nation, because this nation is responsible for really millions upon millions of lives in the world today, people being alive, whether through responding for calls for help militarily or medically or whatever. And we understand that we can only do that if we maintain the kind of government, the kind of system that we have had since our founding, regardless of the efforts to change it, to mold it, to shape it into something progressive. Without the freedom, without the free market system, without capitalism, without what we have had as a basis for operation for all these years, the rest of the world will flounder and die. And here's why. Because socialism cannot exist without capitalism. For just a moment, I want you to think. If it were not for capitalism, there would not be cellular technology, cellular telephones. There would not be the iPhone. There would not be the Android phone. There would not be the MacBook. There would not be the PC. There would not be any of these things without capitalism, because the push for profit drives that development. And it drives advances in technology. And those people who are in the streets protesting / rioting for change are coordinating and are getting all of their information and sending all of their information using technology built by capitalism. They sit in their coffee shops and they post to their blogs about the evils of America using devices invented because of capitalism. They're able to drink their coffee because the business model that makes their coffee shop possible and profitable was built on capitalism. Everything they do is funded by capitalism. So when Margaret Thatcher said the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money, she was absolutely right. Because when you finally win and you get the socialist dream implemented and started, that's when everything begins to fall apart. Because eventually, the people who are motivated by profit are no longer motivated. And they don't create the fund. They don't create the money anymore. They don't generate the cash you need to do what you want to do. You need look no further than Cuba. You thought I was going to say Venezuela, I know. Venezuela works as well, Cuba or Venezuela. Because in those places, the people don't live very well. They don't have much. Creativity is squashed. I mean, you're talking about, let's just use Cuba for example, a government that will prevent you from planting flowers in your front yard because nobody else in your neighborhood has them is crushing creativity and the human spirit. And that happens in Cuba. Oh, I'm sorry, you can't paint the windowsills around on your house a different color because nobody else in the neighborhood can do that. It's not fair. You can't make more money or enjoy life at a higher level than the next guy because that's not fair. It doesn't matter what you do or how it benefits you or how you choose to use your money. When the government tells you what you can do, that crushes your incentive to do better and to do more. And that's exactly how socialism runs out of money. Because eventually, the will to keep creating that capital vanishes. And the funds for socialism dry up. And the people get mad and angry and miserable. And they're stuck. Welcome back. It's the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. I hope your weekend was good. And I hope you're looking forward to a good week. But buckle up because things are getting crazy. I posted on social media the other day, I think it was yesterday, that since the announcement that Kamala Harris was the vice presidential pick for the Democrats, I have been receiving, in one day, in 24 hours, I received no less than 10, possibly a dozen, but I'll go with 10, unsolicited emails from places I've never gotten email from, including the Democrat Governors Organization. The organization for Democrat governors. I get an email from them now. Now, I've told you this before, I signed up for the Obama for America, you know, that his organizing thing early on because I wanted to see what they were telling everybody. I mean, you know, that famous saying, know your enema. But I signed up for that so that I could see what they were telling their people. And that's one reason I know that uninformed people will believe anything. You should read some of the stuff they put out. And people will believe. You know, people accuse people like me, podcast hosts and people in conservative media, the leftists look at us and point their bony fingers of righteous indignation and say, are you going to believe this conspiracy theorist? They label us as being conspiracy theorists. Well, if you read some of the emails you get from them, wow. Let's crack open Area 51 and have lunch with the aliens because there's some bizarre stuff happening when it comes to the emails you get from these people. But I've received so many, and it's a daily thing. A daily thing. I think it was last Thursday I got no less than 10, and the same thing happened again on Friday, Saturday, yesterday. I get messages from all these different sources now. And it's interesting to see what they're saying. And it's enlightening to see what they're saying. And I wouldn't recommend this for everybody. But I would say that if you are an inquisitive person, if you are an independent thinker, if you are an analytical thinker, if you're someone who can reason your way out of a wet paper bag, I suggest that you go subscribe to a couple of them and just watch what they're saying to their people, because it's amazing. On redistricting alone, gerrymandering alone, they're lying daily to those who subscribe. And we've talked about this before, but it's an interesting thing to watch. What they're saying is just nuts. So it should be no surprise to us whatsoever that anything and everything for these people is racist.
Everything is racist!
Guess what's racist now? Camping. Yes, camping. The LA Times has declared that camping is racist. They are finding disparity in, get this,
access to the outdoors.
They're trying to tell us that people of color can't go camping because it's too expensive. The last time I checked, all you needed to go camping was a sleeping bag and a way to get to the outdoors. pretty much. If you want to do some basic camping, there's nothing to keep you from camping. You just need a little bit of information to make sure you don't do anything stupid and you're good to go. But if you want to dial it up some and talk about possibly glamping, going in an RV, all decked out, air conditioning, refrigeration, shower, all of that stuff, you want to talk about that? Yeah, that takes some money. But camping, no. You can go to an army surplus store and get secondhand tents. You can go to thrift stores and buy secondhand camping gear for very little money, and you can go camping. But they would have us believe, the progressive press would have us believe, that now camping is racist. Ladies and gentlemen, the world is ridiculous. It's absurd. You might as well enjoy it. Something else. The political left is up in arms after the federal government announced a plan to cut a decade-old water conservation regulation, which in doing so mocks President... They're mocking President Donald Trump for caring more about his showers than the planet. You've no doubt seen this bouncing around in social media. Oh, yeah, the president just wants hot showers. He didn't care about the environment and the fact that we're all going to die. Well, what most of them fail to mention is that the original enforcement guidance, a policy of former President Barack Obama's administration, was actually so bad it caused industry outrage. It was even mistaken as a scam. Trump's Energy Department issued the rule change Thursday. The government's reversal of the previous interpretation is set to give companies more market power as they try out new models. Consumers get more freedom of choice. Best of all, it takes one last relic of the Obama administration out of the American bathroom. The original 1992 Energy Policy Act set the maximum flow of any showerhead to be 2.5 gallons per minute or less. 2.5 gallons per minute. I don't know if you remember this, but on the Seinfeld TV show back in the 90s, there was an episode about their building, the building that Kramer and Seinfeld lived in, that the super had gone through and replaced all of the showerheads in the building with low-flow showerheads. And they all had greasy hair because they couldn't get the shampoo out of their hair. They were very unhappy with the things. And Kramer found a black market source for high-flow showerheads. It was a very funny episode. A very funny episode. Well, an Obama-era guidance change drastically reversed that interpretation. After a year review following a publicly released draft, the former administration issued the guidance change in 2011. Under this updated view, all nozzles in a system can't exceed 2.5 gallons of total per minute total when used together. All the nozzles. Let's for example, if you have a shower head that has two nozzles, that means you get a 50% reduction. More complicated systems, a restriction makes the devices impractical, just completely functionally impractical. You know, there are some shower systems that have an overhead rain shower, and then they have jet shower heads that hit you from all angles. Trust me, I've never been in one of those, but they're out there. The update to such a drastic change is that one person thought it was such a drastic change. One person thought a letter from the government about that restriction was part of some criminal scheme. Pedro Mir, he's the vice president of the bathroom and kitchen fixture company Altman's Products, told the Foundation for Economic Education back in 2017. He said, At first I thought it was a scam. It was so ridiculous. He thought it was a scam. His company was forced to stop selling several high-flow models, despite the showerhead's popularity among customers. And, of course, Trump's move to give more freedom to the American consumers is being panned by leftists. It's narcissistic and embarrassing. Mockery of the president's hair is widespread in criticisms of the decision. Elizabeth Warren, she said, "I can't believe I have to say this. The federal government should not be changing our country's water efficiency standards because Donald Trump is having problems washing his hair." Rachel Maddow. She also said, "We're also now just wildly embarrassing. The Energy Department today proposed easing efficiency requirements for showerheads following multiple complaints from President Trump about how low water flow is impeding his ability to properly wash his hair." Really? The deregulation of American bathing habits is only the latest in Trump's war against government red tape. Giving companies and customers more freedom than ever is a surefire way to bring our economy roaring back stronger than ever. It means more variety in products is what it means. It means more choice for you. It means better options for everybody. If you want to conserve water, then you can buy low-flow shower heads. If you want a more efficient shower, then you can buy high-flow shower heads. The same goes for light bulbs. Remember when the incandescent light bulb thing happened and everybody said, what? You're taking light bulbs away? What do we have to buy now? All those little curly fluorescent things? Yeah, I looked at those in the store. They cost like four times as much. And then what they don't tell you is that in some states, California, you practically have to have somebody in hazmat gear come remove your fluorescent light bulbs when they do burn out because they contain hazardous materials. The incandescent light bulb? Nothing. The little curly fluorescent light bulbs? Yeah, they're poisonous. You break them, it's not a good thing. Thank goodness for the invention of the LED light bulb. That's all I can say. Many of us have changed over or in the process of changing over to all LEDs. They last a long time. They don't use much power at all. Invention powered by government oppression. Go figure. But I think you should have a nice long hot shower and wash your hair today. And here we go. The second half of this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hey, as long as we're dealing with things that ain't so, have you seen the meme that's making the rounds about Trump's... Trump's crony reducing sorting capacity of the U.S. Postal Service by 21 million pieces of mail per hour, about 10%. It's not true. There's this meme going around that's got pictures of a big sorting machine, and it says at least 671 mail sorting machines have been removed from post offices across the country. Each machine can sort about 35,000 pieces of mail per hour. Since June, Trump's crony has reduced the sorting capacity by 21.4 million pieces of mail per hour. About 10% of the UPS, USPS stock removals are happening in every state but Alaska. Not true. Not true. The evidence so far is very weak. It's a conspiracy theory, by the way. There are many more reasonable explanations. And the thing is that there's a lot that goes on with the post office that you and I are not aware of, mainly because the post office is in financial trouble every year. They lose billions of dollars every year. So they close things down. They move things around. They revamp, they resort, and it's all in the effort to make things more efficient. Which with government agencies is a big challenge because they don't like efficiency. They don't like things to change. And you may have seen a version of this with pictures of postal boxes, you know, the blue post office boxes that you see on, at shopping centers and the like. You may have seen pictures of trucks with those loaded on them. The post office moves those things around. And so it's not unusual from time to time to see a truck with a bunch of post office boxes on it, because what they do is they go to places where they don't get much use and they move those to places where they are getting more use. So they concentrate them in higher use areas and pull them out of lower use areas. It's just efficiency, but they don't tell you about that. So if you see this meme floating around talking about how Trump is gutting the Postal Service, it's not true. No version of it, by the way, is true. The Postal Service is inefficient for their own reasons. And anything that's being done now is an effort to try to staunch the flow, so to speak. The New York Democrats in New York right now, changing the topic, they're kind of angry. And the reason they are this time is because the New York Police Department Union has endorsed Trump as a presidential candidate. The NYPD union faced blowback from local Democrats after it endorsed President Trump's reelection amid budget cuts and tensions between police and city lawmakers. Friday night, Trump spoke to members of the New York City Police Benevolent Association, the PBA, an organization that represents 24,000 officers. He did this at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Trump was formally endorsed by the group. PBA President Pat Lynch said it was the first time he could recall the group ever endorsing a president. He says, "I have 36 years on this job as the president of this fine organization. I cannot remember when we've ever endorsed the office of the president of the United States until now." That's how important this is. Many times people say that a union like ours, law enforcement groups, give endorsements, not in the New York City PBA, sir. In the New York City PBA, Mr. President, you earn the endorsement, and you've earned this endorsement. I'm proud to give it. I've admired you my whole life, watched you do a job like nobody else. Nobody else done it. Best of the best, and I'm grateful, happy you're here. He said to the group, that's what the president said, to the group of officers in attendance. And he also talked about his brother Robert. He visited in a New York City hospital Friday. So the president has been endorsed by the New York Police Department Union. And they've never endorsed a president before. And the Democrats are not happy. And this is what they get for being anti-cop. They're being anti-cop. Their hate for police is overflowing. And they're preventing the cops from doing their job. They won't let them enforce the law. They're letting rioters run wild in cities across America. And what else could they possibly expect? What else could they possibly expect but that the police union would turn and endorse the presidential candidate who has their back? So more power to them. I'm glad they did. Really glad they did. And speaking of the president's brother, he did pass away and over the weekend. And there's been a great deal of sadness for the Trump family. Many condolences expressed on social media. And then there's also the proof that Twitter is just the seventh circle of hell and that social media is a waste of your time, because Democrats, progressives, leftists on social media have been vile, absolutely vile. The hashtag wrong Trump trended over the weekend, as in the wrong Trump is dead. This is what we're getting from progressives, those who are more tolerant, more accepting, more caring, more loving, who are intellectually and morally superior. The wrong Trump died. You just need to file that one for future reference. Because when they talk about being accepting, when they talk about being compassionate, when they talk about being tolerant, you need to remember that when the brother of the President of the United States passed away, these progressive lunatics who were populating social media went south, went bad, went nasty, instead of stepping away and expressing condolences. And remember that if this had been the other way around, if, say, a close relative of Joe Biden had passed away, that the vast majority of conservative people who are active in social media would have taken a step back from their politics and said, "So sorry to hear the news. Our prayers are with you and your family." But not so for progressives, the tolerant and caring on social media. That did not happen because they are evil souls, and all they care about is power, and their lust for power blinds them to their humanity. And speaking of Joe Biden and him running for president, former President Barack Obama has publicly supported him and his bid for the White House. But it appears that behind closed doors, Obama is not so enthusiastic. He's reportedly said bad things about his vice president. Coming from Blaze, theblaze.com, Chris Inlow reports that despite Biden often touting a best friend relationship between himself and Obama, there are lingering tensions between the 44th president and Biden. That's according to a lengthy magazine story by Politico. Those tensions were highlighted during the 2016 election when Obama eagerly endorsed Hillary Clinton's campaign, and again in 2020 when Obama declined to endorse a candidate in the Democratic primary, as noted by Politico. Now, I said back during all of this, during the political primary, that people were saying, no, Obama's not endorsing anybody. Why isn't he endorsing anybody? Because it's not politically expedient. I explained this. He's not going to endorse anybody before they've made a choice. The rest of them would just, you want to talk about a rebellion? He has to wait to see who wins, and then he'll endorse them. It's not smart to do anything else. One Democrat strategist who anonymously spoke, I know my mouth does work sometimes, to Politico, claimed Obama was privately dismissed. He's privately dismissed Biden's electoral prowess. The strategist claims that Obama told him, quote, "Don't underestimate Joe's ability to F things up." Last year, Obama reportedly told a 2020 candidate that Biden severely lacked the ability to connect with a Democratic electorate, especially in Iowa. According to Politico, Obama said, "And you know who really doesn't have it? Joe Biden." Biden aides have even highlighted differences in Obama's endorsement of Clinton to his endorsement of Biden as evidence Obama lacks faith in Biden's ability to be victorious on the campaign trail. Here's a quote from the Politico article. "Biden and his aides often act like they have something to prove to the Obama team that doubted them. Some Biden allies noted that Obama's endorsement of Biden, when it finally arrived, lacked the effusiveness of his endorsement of Clinton." He said of Clinton in his video message in 2016, "I don't think there's ever been someone so qualified to hold this office." 4 years later, in his endorsement video for Biden, he said, "I believe Joe has all the qualities we need in the president right now, and I know he will surround himself with good people." Wow. Just in case you had doubts, he's going to be surrounded with people who can pick up what he drops. Wow. According to Leon Panetta, defense secretary during the Obama administration, Biden has often felt as if his loyalty toward Obama was not repaid in kind. He says, "He was loyal, I think, to Obama in every way in terms of defending and standing by him, even probably when he disagreed with what Obama was doing. To some extent, he oftentimes felt that loyalty was not being rewarded." Well, despite the apparent rocky relationship between the former president and vice president, Obama will headline the Democrat National Convention this week to officially nominate Biden as the Democratic Party's 2020 nominee. Of course they will. Oh, by the way, in case you did forget, that is happening. The Democrat National Convention is happening this week. It'll be a virtual convention, but it'll be happening. There will be a parade of progressive hard left speakers. As I understand it, the keynote will be delivered by one Bernie Sanders. I think it's interesting. A socialist. Let's go ahead and just admit it. He's a communist. Speaking to the people. Probably appropriate, since now with Kamala Harris, creepy Uncle Joe is adopting the philosophy and promises of Bernie Sanders in order to appeal to the leftist fringe, in hopes that that leftist fringe will carry them over the winners, the finish line, and into the winner's circle. It ain't gonna happen. All righty. Let's jump into this final segment for this Monday, the 17th day of August, 2020. There's an article on Daily Wire by David Limbaugh I wanted to share with you, so I'm just going to read through what he had to say and hopefully have some time to wrap up things at the end, but I want you to hear what he has to say. The title is Demonizing Trump Supporters Only Strengthens Their Resolve. A recent seemingly insignificant news story disturbingly reveals the intensity of the American left's intolerance and authoritarianism. Coupled with the left's ongoing mission to destroy our cities, this is an ominous sign of what America will look like if the Democratic ticket wins the presidency. The story was under the headline, Brett Favre Faced Social Media Backlash Thanks to Donald Trump. After detailing Favre's NFL quarterback accomplishment, the writer gets to the point. Favre may have faced criticism for how he handled his few final seasons with Green Bay, but it hadn't damaged his reputation as one of the all-time greats. However, he may have just made a choice that will alter how many perceive him off the field, away from football. Favre's reputation may have taken a significant hit with what he did by playing golf with President Donald Trump. Favre faced serious hate and backlash on social media, according to the writer. There are reasons for people to pile on that choice, as some believe Trump is the representation of disappointing flaws, both morally and ethically, during his presidency, he says. Regardless of what Favre does, moving forward, he will forever be associated with the president. It may have only been a picture, but a picture in many ways can say 1,000 words. Notice that this wasn't even about Favre making a controversial political statement, such as those celebrities make at their self-idolatrous award events. He just played golf with Trump, which triggered enormous social media backlash from the left, similar to the blowback NFL quarterback Drew Brees received for having a family photo with the president, to say nothing of how Brees was condemned for speaking out against kneeling for the national anthem until he groveled, apologized 3,000 times, and reversed himself. This should be no surprise to anyone. Canceled culture is a creature of the left. Leftists are the ones who comb the recesses of internet archives for any morsel of damning evidence they can use to destroy people's careers over a politically incorrect opinion uttered even many years ago. Leftists are the ones who feel free to drive conservatives out of restaurants. How many people do you know who would be afraid to put a Joe Biden bumper sticker on their car or a Biden sign in their yard? Ask around, and you'll find tons of people afraid to publicly support Trump. But this is about more than destroying people's careers for refusing to own the latest leftist cultural fad or identity politics command. This is not simply the targeting of a public figure for, say, denying that there are 70 genders. It's about the wholesale demonization of half of America's population, the half that supports President Trump. Observe how glibly the writer just assumes that it is a given Trump supporters are tainted by their support. Notice how he doesn't even question the moral legitimacy of the backlash Favre received. Instead, he affirms it. He doesn't just say Favre's sin was playing golf with Trump, but, quote, what he did by playing golf with Trump, end quote, as if to double emphasize the innocuous act. Can these people not hear themselves? The takeaway from this story has little to do with Favre, who serves merely as a convenient prop, as representative of all Trump supporters. Conservatives are not allowed to express their opinions in America's dominant media culture. They're not allowed to like President Trump. Their entire character will be called into question if they do. The irony is that the left created Trump politically. It is the very type of intolerance the left now displays toward Trump supporters that birthed the environment in which Trump emerged. Most Trump supporters see him as the last best hope to save America from the nihilistic, unforgiving, despotic, and violent left. The left desperately pushes the narrative that if you support Trump, you are a heartless, racist, sexist, homophobe, relying on its slanderous caricature of Trump as all those things. Memo to leftists. We reject your depiction of Trump as a racist. We reject that he's dangerous for America. The opposite is the case. And we fervently reject your word about much of anything, as you're still shamelessly spreading the ludicrous lie that he's a Russian agent. The left has now come fully out of the closet and shown its unquenchable contempt for America and how far it is willing to go to overthrow our constitutional republic. Given the radical left's abominable behavior, do they really think they can shame us for supporting the main human being standing in the way of their revolutionary aims? No, we won't apologize for supporting President Trump. And the more extreme the left shows itself to be, the stronger will be our resolve. The left and its enablers want to compare notes. If they want to compare notes, we'll be happy to do so. A vote for Biden is a vote for anarchy, for the disintegration of law and order, for economic paralysis, for stunning intolerance, and for the forfeiture of America as we know it, to the incalculable detriment of Americans, especially the younger generations who may not realize the full import of this would-be voluntary abolition of our liberty. Unlike the left, we won't personally condemn Biden supporters, many of whom are our friends. But we do scratch our heads over how so many decent people can be utterly clueless about America's fate under the iron rule of a Democratic Party, which has sold itself to leftist extremists. Limbaugh says something a little further back up in the article about, he says, how many people do you know who would be afraid to put a Joe Biden bumper sticker on their car or Biden sign in their yard? And I've talked about this particular aspect before. And that is that we even have stats. There have been polling and such now that shows that most conservative people are afraid to talk about their political ideas in today's environment because of the vitriol, the vileness, the nastiness that comes back if they do. And so most people are not putting Trump signs in their yards. On the flip side of the coin, you see Democrat signs everywhere. Over the weekend, I as I said earlier at the beginning of the podcast, I spent some time with family. And on the route to my mother's house, I passed through an area where there are a lot of liberals. And in that area, there are political signs in yards. Lots and lots and lots of political signs. Right now, we're here in Alabama. The state is making a choice between the Democrat, Doug Jones, who won his seat through a very dirty, dirty, underhanded scheme by the Democrats, undermining former Chief Justice Roy Moore. If I may remind you, he was accused of doing some pretty nasty things with underage girls. And then all of those accusers after the election vanished into a puff of smoke. Gloria Allred represented one of them. And after the election, and Doug Jones has won, she dropped the client and went on to look for other ambulances to chase. And I thought to myself, wow, this was nasty. As it was all happening, I knew this is all calculated. This is all has a purpose. And then what happened? They said the same thing, tried to use the same thing against President Trump in the election. They tried to do that with him, and then they tried the same thing with Brett Kavanaugh. It was successful in Alabama. They tried it other places. But Doug Jones is now one of the senators from the state of Alabama. You see his signs all over parts of town. And even in the fringe area where I live, well outside of the Birmingham city limits, you don't see many political signs. You just don't. And the reason for that is that conservative people, although they have strong opinions about what's happening politically in America today, don't advertise those political opinions very often. We don't put the signs in our yards. We rarely put stickers on our cars. And part of the reasoning for that is that we know that if we do, there are places that we go out of necessity in our daily lives when we may come back to our vehicles and find the bumper stickers ripped off or the windows broken, if you've got a sticker on your window or something like that, because we know that it does happen. We know that vehicles are vandalized by people who have opposing views, but no civility. But that's just one reason we don't. We still have those political views. We still have those opinions. We still have that worldview. And these negative actions reinforce it. And when other people who have in the past voted Democrat, but don't understand what's wrong with the Democrat philosophy, when they see what's happening in the world around them, such as people's vehicles being vandalized or their yard signs being torn down or burned or stolen or whatever, or their cities being ransacked by mobs because of politics, their opinions begin to change as well. And they stop voicing their political opinions. But when it comes down to the line, those people will step into a voting booth and vote for someone they did not advertise, that they did not declare publicly, because their resolve was changed. And as the fascists seek to take over America, people who love this country are taking note. Our resolve is being strengthened, and when it comes time to vote, we will vote for the one candidate who will stand against this evil which is trying to overtake our country. And that person is not Joe Biden. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.